What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Rock Your Brand podcast. Today we are going to be, talking about product lines. And the reason why we're talking about this is because it's very, very, very important if you are, in fact, building a brand, which we recommend. If you have been around us for any period of time, you know we talk about building a brand, and it doesn't have to be a massive brand. It's just a cohesive brand. And here's the question that I would like to ask you right up front, and we can get the comments rolling right off the bat. And that is, would you rather sell one product and make $20, or would you rather sell three and make $90? Well, I would probably want to choose the second one. I don't know who wouldn't. I mean, if we can increase the value of how much a customer buys, we immediately are going to make more money. And so I'd like to know in the comments, just kind of entertain me here and let me know, would you rather sell a product for $20 and find a whole bunch of those people, or would you rather find someone have them buy more? How about this? How would you like to have someone buy from you today and buy from you next month and maybe 6 months down the line and maybe next year when you start to do Q4 again? I don't know. You let me know. This is the power of creating a cohesive brand that has products that can be purchased now or in the future. We see a common trend right now that has been happening for a long time. The last, I would say, since I've been in this whole Etsy world about 3 years now, but it's been happening in the Amazon space. It's been happening in the eBay space where people are just hopping on trends. They're trying to find that winning product that's going to make them, you know, $10,000 a month or $15,000 a month. Just constantly trying to find that one product. That's one customer. And if you don't have anything else to sell them, then you have to keep finding that customer, that same customer, over and over and over and over again. It's a much better strategy to acquire a customer and then from there, sell them more and then sell them again. Like, that just makes so much more sense. And so I would like to know in the comments, are you interested in building an e-commerce brand, or are you, just looking to build maybe a little side hustle and selling some random stuff on Etsy or whatever platform you choose? I'm just curious, because today what we're going to do, though, is we're going to break down and give you guys some examples of what a product line looks like. And hopefully this will help you if you are considering creating a product line. So, Chris, with that all being said, hopefully I teed that up well. What do you think? You want to build a product line here or show people how to do it?
So first things first, you said, do you want to sell one product for $20? And because we've been in the Etsy ecosystem for so long, even though I know what we're doing here today, I was like, or 20 products for $1 each, right? Because that's typically the exchange that people tell you have to make on the Etsy platform. And I think we need to think about this a little bit differently. And that's why we're having the conversation that we're having today, Scott. And I think you know this, but I gave a little presentation about Etsy ads for our buddy Kevin yesterday. And I brought up a stat that we've talked about in the past in terms of Etsy buyers and how powerful it is. And you and I talk all the time about how things like Etsy ads are not about getting the sale. It's not about getting the traffic. It's about getting the customers. And when we look at the numbers from something like the Etsy buyer survey, we know that Etsy buyers want to buy from shops that they've purchased from in the past. You don't see this in a lot of other marketplaces like Amazon, right? 64% of Etsy buyers prefer shops that they've purchased from in the past. And 44% of top buyers, those buyers who purchase 11 or more times per year in the Etsy ecosystem, don't even go to the search results first. They go to shops first and start at the shop level. So if we're not coming at this from the 3 for $90 or more approach, we are doing this wrong. We're not only doing ourselves a disservice, but we're doing our customers and our potential future customers a disservice by not giving them the option to buy from the shops that they've purchased from in the past, because there's just nothing left for them to get. And so, Scott, that is how I wanted to kind of lead into this today, because I think it's important for people to understand, not only as the sellers, can we not just have a single time transaction? This is not a one-time game, but our buyers are hungry for shops they can come back to again and again. Etsy has doubled and tripled down over the last 2 years on trying to create a place where people can come back to buy again and again from the shops that they trust. And they even talked about that at the end of last year, beginning of this year, when they talked about their few initiatives. I forget what the vital few, I think is what they called it, in their Q4 or Q1 report this year, where they're like, we're really doubling and tripling down, guys. Hey, we're really serious this time about turning those one-time buyers into repeat customers. Etsy's serious about that because they know that buyers and customers in the Etsy platform are loyal to shops as long as there is a reason for them to come back. And that's what we're talking about here today.
Yeah. And I mean, here's the deal though, right? We're talking about Etsy, but we're talking about e-com. We're talking about e-commerce. And I know like right now, and we're probably going to do a whole nother training on like how to use Etsy as a launch pad for your e-commerce brand, because that's what I think people start out because they saw a video of someone saying you can sell a candle and make $15,000 a month, or you can just sell candles and make $15,000 a month, which you probably can, but you got to do more than just sell that one candle. So my whole thing is, if you watch the millionaires, billionaires, if you watch them, especially the ones on Shark Tank, for example, Mr. Wonderful, if you listen to what they say, a lot of times it's how much does it cost you to acquire a customer? So they're already saying like that first sale is probably not going to be the one that makes you the money. It's the sale after that and after that and after that and after that. Okay. So that's what a lot of times we have to think about, but it's being taught out there and shared that you just basically find random products that are trending. The problem with that is there's no longevity to that, right? It's like the minute that a product starts to hit, guess what? You're going to have 10 other people or 20 other people seeing it and then wanting to do it themselves. And they're just going to copy it and then do it again. So we're going to try to avoid that. So with that all being said, let's kind of dig in and let's start discussing and sharing with you what a product line actually looks like. Oh, actually, before I do that though, I should probably throw this out there. If you're brand new to this channel, or even this is maybe your first live, and you would like a roadmap that shows you our philosophy, but also the methods that we've used and actually applied it to my wife's shop that has done $100,000 in a 12-month period, you can download that. It's our roadmap. It's our 100K roadmap. If you'd like a copy of that in the comments, put in roadmap. Just write roadmap in the comments and we'll make sure that we send you a copy. All right. Totally free, by the way. So if you want that, that will give you the framework. It'll give you the mindset. It'll give you the strategies of how to make this all work. So with that all being said, Chris, the very first thing that you have to have in place in order to make this work, and we've said this 100,000 times, probably not that much, but it's probably close, is you need to have focus on who the customer is. And the customer usually is going to be inside of a niche. Okay. And it could be a big niche, and then you narrow it down, like whatever, but it needs to be someone that potentially would buy more than just that one item. All right. And so that's why we're always looking at like the niche. We have to find the niche first. So if you don't have that, we do need to find that. We also have a video that we did, I think it was a week or two ago. We'll link that up in the description as well, because that one there was a good one as far as like understanding niches and like how to find that niche and how to validate the niche and like all of those things. So we'll link that up in the description as well. So let's get into Chris and let's maybe start pulling up some examples, because we did find some examples that will really illustrate this and not just talk about it, but we can actually show it. And we can also show how you can do a little bit of detective work in your niche and see maybe what products are selling. And even if there's a brand that's not fully leveraging other products in other brands, we can kind of cross promote them, or we can add them by looking at that and bringing those two together, products that are selling well. And there's a couple examples that we'll share with you. So Chris, which one you want to pull up first?
Let's start with one of the greatest hits here, Scott. You know, we actually showed this shop a few weeks ago, and we remarked at the time that it was something that was screaming for exactly this process. And so you and I have been having a conversation behind the scenes and said, hey, you know, this is something they're doing pretty well, but they could be doing a heck of a lot better because there's only so many digital products that you can sell. And if we look at this shop is called Bible Sketches, and they do some really cool, interesting artwork around, obviously, the Christian Bible, right? And so they're pulling out some things. But it appears, Scott, when we start to look at this, that almost all of these are digital products, if not all of these are digital products. And so they're prints, right? And we've talked about this in the past, and there's nothing wrong with selling a digital version of this product. But immediately when I see this, I go, why aren't you selling the physical thing?
Yeah. Right?
But it's not the only thing that we can do here. And so I know you wanted to take a quick look at their numbers as well, just to see how much they are selling before we dive in to really see what it is that we would do to improve this shop using the product line process. And so this is what their shop looks like. I've already come into Everbee. I sorted it. I pulled all the listings in, and then I sorted it by monthly sales, just so everybody who's playing along at home can see the same information that we are looking at.
Well, and Chris, because again, like some people aren't familiar with Everbee and the tool and all that stuff. So we'll bring that up. Like the tool we're using is Everbee. If you guys want to try it, you can try it for free. It's brandcreators.com/Everbee. And you can go ahead and try it, but just walk people through real quick how you arrived here, right? Like, so you went to the shop, you saw all their listings right here. And then you just went into, because now it's a Chrome extension. You went in there, you analyzed the shop. Right.
Yes. And then it's going to pull up a screen that says, hey, here's their top listings, right? The first ones that you see on that page.
Yep.
And just click the analyze listings button. And then once I did that, all I did was I sorted it by monthly sales. If you want to sort, you can just come in and click on the little arrow next to any of these. We can sort them by price, by monthly revenue, right? Total sales, any of those kinds of things. So it's a very straightforward process. Once you've done it once, you can do it over and over again, and you'll get to be able to see the exact view that you and I are looking at here, just to see what the top sellers are currently, right?
And so right now, and where I got the $9,000, by the way, guys, I know I get some people that are like, you know, you put that in the thumbnail, but where's the $9,000? Well, if you look and you total up 3,135, 3,014, and 2,409. Just those three products is $9,000. It's like $9,020 if my math is correct, because I did it already. But it's 9,000. Okay. Now you can see on the right there, Chris, where it says total sales. And can we see how long they've been selling these? Can you scroll to the right? I believe it is. Yeah. So these listings, how old are they? 17 months old on the one, 28 on the other, and then 16 months on the other. So two of them are just over almost a year and a half. And then you have the other one that's just over 2 years.
Yeah.
So we're not even looking at all of the other products that make up this product line. This is just, we're just looking at the top three.
And if we do, we see, okay, you know, there's another $3,000-$5,000 here.
Yep.
Right. And then they have several that sell 300, 600, 600, right? The thing that's really interesting to me here, Scott, is the monthly sales amount. And the reason that they're making the money that they're making here is the price point, right? If we're selling 55 of these at $6 a month, that is very limiting, right? Yeah. There's a lot of volume. There's a lot of demand for this product, for this design. But we're looking at this only from the digital perspective. And it may be because we don't know that we can include print on demand. Maybe it's because we don't want to get our hands messy or deal with the extra customer service email. But we could sell this same product for $30, $40, $50, this same design for $30, $40, $50 on a few other different things. Maybe a pillow, a blanket, a t-shirt, right? We've already done the work to create it. Why not add some of those things into our store? Take the chance on the, you know, the 20-cent listing fee and see if we can take this from $300 to $3,000. And that, I think, is something we see people making that mistake constantly when we do the Etsy shop audits.
Here's the other thing, though, I want people to understand. So if you have more than one product that pertains to that customer, you now also will get the recommendations inside of Etsy when you're there saying, like, you may like this as well, or whatever their verbiage is, right? It's going to show you additional products that this shop is offering that might pertain to you because other people showed interest in it or purchased it. The other thing I want you to also think about is this right here. If you were to take all these products and port them over to a Shopify store, you now also could sell these outside of Etsy and probably do very well. So this is what we're like, to me, this is exactly what we're talking about, like a brand cohesiveness, having other products that you could promote now, but in the future. If one, let me ask you guys this in the comments, do you think that if you had someone buy one of these things, do you think that they're into religion, Christianity, faith, spiritual? Do you think that there's other products that they might want to buy? Let me know in the comments. I know it sounds kind of like a silly question, but I'm just curious what you think. And if so, how would it be for you to just be able to sit down? And I'm not saying this niche in particular, but if you were able to sit down and like this person that has this business right now can literally say, okay, what am I going to create tomorrow for Christians? It's literally that simple. It's not, oh, I got to go find another thing that's trending. Right? I mean, it just seems so obvious.
So Scott, you said, you know, do you think that these people are probably into Christianity or religion to some point? And I immediately went to try to find the one example that I could, because most of these are like parables, right? Yeah. So it's the prodigal son returns or whatever. Like, this is one of the top selling products in the shop. Maybe you buy this if you're really into boat art. But you're not going to find this if you search for boat art on Etsy, right? It's right. Jesus walks on water. Peter and Jesus walking on water. They're leaving the boat to walk on water. And we can see even in this image, right? Probably Jesus and Peter hanging out right here. Jesus in the front, Peter in the back, right? And could you potentially buy this if you're not into the Christian niche? Yeah, if you really like boat sketches.
Right.
But other than that, right? And if you ignore the title, the tags, all of those things, then yeah, maybe you get this. But other than that, everything in the shop is explicitly targeted at the Christian audience. So why don't we double, triple down? We're already using the niche-based approach. Why don't we take these things that people clearly love, right? 20 views in the last 24 hours on this product alone, right? Mm-hmm. If we're taking this just as a digital print, a good chunk of those 20 people are not going to buy it because they don't want to go through the process of having to find somebody to print it out, get it framed, put it on canvas, do whatever it is that they want to do. And we, as the brand owner, obviously we don't own this brand, but if we did, are leaving lots of money on the table because those people are going to spend another $20, $30, $40, $50 once they get this digital file to get it printed, matted, framed. If we can take care of that by adding that in as a print on demand product for them, then we get a good chunk. Yes, there are some costs associated with that, but we get a good chunk of that $20, $30, $40, $50. And if we then take this and appropriate this design or a similar design onto other types of products, right? Maybe they don't want a boat sketch on their wall. Maybe they want a boat sketch pillow or they want, you know, a boat sketch blanket. And we can take this same design and start to add to the product line. You can only put so many prints on your wall before you start to look like the Louvre. Right. And if we're not offering them the other options, then we're leaving that money on the table and that customer loyalty on the table. Because yes, are they going to come back to our shop the next time they need a Christian sketch for the wall? Yes. But the next time they're like, man, my dad really loved the Jesus walking on water sketch. Let me go back to that store. And all we see is sketches. He's only got so much room on his wall for Christian themed sketches. If there's another way that he can use that, then I'm going to come back and I'm going to buy that for him in that same shop. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I love that. So I also want to say this is one example of this shop that is doing a good job of creating products for that one customer, but they're not leveraging these art prints on other things. We've made that very clear. So hopefully you got that. But the other thing is, and we're going to show you another example here in a minute, so hang tight, on how you can then learn from another brand that's selling in this space that we can go, oh, maybe we should add that product or some of those here because the market, the niche is still buying these other things. We're not offering them. So there's a whole nother opportunity because you've already captured the audience that you want to capture. And if you're doing things as we've talked about in the past, and you're building an email list and, you know, sending emails on a weekly basis, you can sell more than just these prints. Because again, like Chris said, once you buy 3-4 prints, maybe that's all the prints you're ever going to buy. Maybe you buy one as a gift or whatever, right? Which is another idea. But then what else could we sell to someone that was wanting to show this? Maybe they're a proud Christian, so there's things that they want to wear, or maybe there's things that they want to display on their on their sofa with a throw pillow or a blanket or something like that, or maybe something that's going to do with a baby verse for a nursery. Like, there's a lot of other things. Okay. But we are going to show you another example here of someone in this same niche that's doing it differently, and they're still doing really well, but they both could learn from each other. Is my point here. So Chris, where do we want to go next? Oh, actually, you know what? Can we see the tags real quick? Again, Everbee, if you guys are brand new, that's the tool we're using to see this information. And let's just take a look at this. So that's been going for 34 months. That's almost 3 years. That's great. So Jesus, Bible verse, Bible art, Jesus art. Okay. So now, Chris, are we looking at these volume numbers and going like, okay, cool, like, that's the number we can expect? Like, what are we really doing here more than just looking at the number?
Yeah, the real thing that we're looking at here is just the correlation of these, right? Yeah. The combination of these different tags. Who is the target market for this? And Scott, the volume here does not get me excited. The competition here does not get me excited. Basically, nothing that I'm seeing in this tab other than the directionality of the volume, I care about. What I really care about is the last thing that we were looking at, which is this. Right. What I want to know is, out of all of those searches, how many people are buying Christian stuff? And we have a really good idea just based on looking at this. And then if we go look at some of the competition, let's pretend, Scott, that Bible Sketches is our shop. If we then go look at what the competition is doing, and we see that selling on different products, it's a similar numbers in terms of sales volume. Mm-hmm. That's when we really have to double, triple down. And somebody in the comments said, yeah, it sounds really easy to do that. It is really easy to do that, as long as there's other people in your space that are selling some things that you haven't tried yet. And that's why we wanted to go through this process today. So Scott, the other shop, and I know we've shared this one in the past.
Well, Chris, I think we've only shared it in our audits. I think
did we share this one in the-
No, I don't think we have. I mean, guys, let us know in the comments if you guys have seen us share this before. But I think this was done in a recent audit that we did.
We've done so many videos over the last few weeks that I'm losing.
Yeah, things are just kind of
track.
Yeah. But this is a good one. This one's a good one.
Yeah, this is a great one. So similar niche, right? Obviously, just looking at the banner, we know it's a similar niche. Christian tees, right? So we know that there are other products that the target customer for this are buying, right? We know that if they're buying t-shirts. And Scott, I know I went off on a rant about this. And I don't know if it was on a live or if it was in one of the shop audits where I said, look, if people are willing to wear something on a t-shirt to say, I am this thing, right? They're willing to put it on a pillow, a blanket, other things, right? Clearly they're willing to put it on canvases in their own house. So if they're willing to put it on a t-shirt and show it off to the world, they're willing to buy something that shows it off in their own house. It's not like you walk, or maybe you do. It's not like you walk around everywhere with a pillow or a blanket, unless you're Linus from Peanuts, right? But if you're willing to buy it as a t-shirt, then we have to be thinking, okay, can we apply this to other things? So we've now seen two very different products that this niche is willing to buy. And if we take a look at the shop analysis on this one, we're going to start to see some very similar numbers. So I'm going to do what I did for that last shop. I'm going to hit the analyze all listings, and that'll take just a minute here because they have a couple hundred of them. 1900 to be exact. And I'm just going to come in, I'm going to sort by monthly sales, right? So if we take a look at this, we see just in these two, they're doing almost, $9,500 a month, Scott. And then we see another, you know, whole bunch down here where we're seeing 800, 1,000, 1,500, 1,300, 1,000, 800, 700, 700, right? All of these things we could be appropriating onto other products. What is it about this shop combined with the last one here, Scott, that gets you really excited to be able to create a product line?
Well, I think it's showing that there's a lot of demand for sweatshirts with Christian, whether it's sayings or whether it's just knowing that you are a Christian, right? So I think that's something. And they're not really, this brand is not using any of these on any type of artwork, right? So whether it's digital downloads for printables, or if it's actually putting them on a canvas, putting them on a pillow, like a lot of these designs could go on a blanket and people would want to buy that. And your margins are going to be higher because it's a more expensive product. Blankets do very well. So I'm seeing this as like, there's a huge amount of potential here. Now I think this shop is actually very new. I think it's only, I think that's 13 months old. That's the listing age, but I think the shop is very young. Can you go to shop details, Chris? It was on the top there. Go back to that. Yeah. Right there.
Yeah. So 27 months.
It's just over 2 years. Okay. Still not that old. Okay. The other thing I want to point out here, Chris, is Boho Christian, right? So Boho Christian, they brought in a very popular, home decor style or just decor in general, for Boho. And now they went Boho Christian shirts. So see how they kind of tapped into another popular, search term, that people are looking for. Seems to be doing well.
Would you say that there's some synergy there? I hate that word. There's some crossover, right?
We can
take those things and combine those. Boho in and itself is not a niche. It's a style. But if we can apply a popular style to our niche, then we can capitalize on that crossover, which you're going to see in every single niche. And I think, again, we could say, Scott, that this only works in this niche because we found these two examples. But you and I see this all the time. In fact, we had a third example that we're not going to share here today that I was looking at yesterday in the wedding space. And there was a shop that sells nothing but like the wedding gift books that was doing around $9,000 or $10,000. Like the sign-in books, what are they called?
Yeah. It's kind of like not a registry. It's a...
Somebody in the comments, save
us. Somebody in the comments, let us know.
Guest book. Guest
book.
Something like that, right?
Maybe.
And then... 2 seconds later, I found somebody who was doing something very similar by selling not guest books, right? So it was everything that that you could do to record everybody that came to your wedding that was not in a book form, right? And it's like, okay, if we think about this, do we want to limit ourselves to only the people, yes, wedding guest books or a wedding register, not a registry? Do we want to only not sell guest books or do we want to sell only guest books? Well, clearly there's a lot of crossover because it's trying to serve the same purpose. Some people are going to want the guest book and some people are going to want the other forms like the jar with the cork where they put their name on it and then they fill the jar with the wine corks, right? All of those different things. And if we're limiting ourselves to a product, which a lot of people, Scott, confuse with a niche, right? And somebody actually, as we were getting started, said, I'm confused as to whether I should start in a product niche or a subject niche. And I said in the comments, products are not niches, right? If we limit ourselves to a single product, we're losing out on tens of thousands of dollars worth of sales. And in the case of the wedding example, obviously that would serve the same need. So we're not going to sell multiples of those to the same person. But if we're saying we only sell guest books and we're going to create all of the world's greatest guest books, then we lose out on the other 500 things that people need for their weddings. And we're leaving our customers high and dry if they really like our style. So not only are we leaving money on the table, but we're forcing our customers to go find what they're looking for somewhere else. And if we see that other people are selling these other things, then we need to give our own take on it. So if we have, a Christian t-shirt shop, let's look at some of the other things. If we have a Christian sketches shop, let's look at some of the other things that are selling really well to that niche. Take that multiple $1,000 revenue stream that we have coming in, leverage those customers into repeat and lifelong customers, and help them serve the need that they have when they're trying to buy things on Etsy instead of sending them to someone else's store.
Yeah. I did want to, before we keep going here, Chris, there's a lot here we can keep digging into, but we wanted to kind of give you guys like examples and kind of show you, we've got two more. So hang with us. Okay. We've got two more examples of kind of how this would all kind of tie together for brand and cohesiveness. And the one thing I really want to say here is like, we're looking at, and this is one thing that we seem like we've been saying over and over and over again as well, is like finding the 3 to 5 products that will be your products that bring in the traffic to your shop. Because a lot of people, what they're doing is they're just launching products and then hoping people are looking for them. We kind of want to do it the opposite way of that. We want to find the 3 to 5 products that people are searching for with good demand. And that's going to funnel people into the shop where then they can be exposed to your products and potentially buy one. It's like you going to a store on a mission to get that one thing, but you walk in the store and you walk out with three other things because they're related and you're in the store, right? It's, I mean, a great example is if you went into Bass Pro Shop and you're going to go in there because you need a new net for, you know, when you're going fishing because one, you know, you tore through it because you had such a big fish that you caught, right? And you go in there and then you walk out with two other lures because you're like, well, I'm here. It's kind of interesting. You might also maybe buy some worms while you're in there, some rubber worms. Like there's other things that are in there because you're in there and they just happen to be there, but you didn't intend on going in there to get those things. So hopefully that illustrates my point. The other thing, Chris, though, before we do keep going here, before we keep delivering some value, do us a favor. If you are getting value, do us a huge favor and give us a little love and smash that like button. And if you want more stuff like this, this is where it all happens on the YouTube channel. So make sure that you subscribe to the channel wherever it is here that you subscribe. So that would be amazing if you would do that. So cool. All right, Chris, what were you going to say, man?
So I was going to continue that example a little bit, right? Scott, you know that I started my working career selling home theater. I cannot tell you the number of times somebody came in for just a TV and left with a brand new universal remote control. They left with a bunch of HDMI cables because, well, you're buying this new TV. It's going to give you this picture quality. Do you really want not a great picture quality coming from your DVD or your Blu-ray player, right?
Yeah.
No, you need a higher quality cable instead of the junky one that came in the box with it. Or maybe you need a DVD player or a Blu-ray player. I guess those are kind of obsolete examples at this point because everybody's streaming everything. But you guys get where we're going with this. Sherry Poppin said, I go in for flies and I come out with a new fly rod. And Scott, I had a question that came in from the comments that I wanted to address with you really quickly. Lisa said, I've heard some Etsy gurus saying that if you sell a bunch of different items in your shop, that it will affect the Etsy algorithm for your shop. Is there any truth to that?
Okay, well, I don't have proof, so I'm not going to sit here and say, like, I know the algorithm and what it wants you to do and what it doesn't want you to do. I would say, kind of like YouTube, is your listings are not going to be shown any better because of your shop. Okay. Your shop authority, on the other hand, could have something to do with it because it's been around a while and it's seasoned. There could be something there in the algorithm that says, okay, this shop has been in the sandbox. Now it's out of the sandbox. It's proved itself. It's gotten really good reputation. It's got good reviews. It's been selling for 2 years. The listings that go out could have some boost, if you will, or they might be shown a little bit easier, right? But really it comes down to independently on those products. If you came out of the gate and your product is just doing great and there's a lot of sales, they're not going to look at you and go, oh, your shop isn't that old, so I'm going to hold you back. It's going to say, wait a minute, this product's selling. People are liking it. Let more people see it. Like that's what it's going to do. So no, I don't think there's truth to it that if you put a whole bunch of different products in there, that it's going to hurt you. Although I would say this, it will hurt you not with the algorithm, but I think it will hurt you as bringing in the wrong people that you won't have as many sales as you would if you had products that they could buy together at checkout and in the future. That's what I would say.
I think that is the important thing. And where people get confused with this, like most things in the Etsy ecosystem, there's probably a grain of truth to this one, Scott. And where people probably get confused with this is Etsy talks about what they call the Etsy shop score, right? Where they're talking about the history of your shop and the types of people who are buying from your store plays a small role in how that individual listing will appeal to the general market. Etsy looks at your shop and they say, okay, Scott, if people come to your store and they're this type of customer, they're more likely to convert. So if we see them searching, we do change the search results slightly, right? It's a very low ranking factor, but we do change the search results slightly if it's a specific type of customer. However, if you are a t-shirt shop, the only place where that would be slightly helpful for you is when somebody's typing in t-shirt, right? Which is not the type of competition that you want to have anyway. If we're looking at this from the niche-based perspective, which we should be, right? Anything that's associated with Christian, so Christian t-shirt, Christian pillow, Christian blanket, that tells Etsy if this is somebody who's looking for a Christian-related thing or a bass fishing-related thing, any of the markets that we use as examples, that then gives us the upper hand. It's not a product level thing. It's a relationality thing, right? So they know, okay, if this is a Christian customer, then we're going to favor Scott's store. Or if this is a t-shirt buyer, then maybe we favor the t-shirt store. But most people are looking at this and they're using the long tail keywords. So they're not typing in t-shirt. They're typing in Christian boho hippie t-shirt or Christian boho Jesus walking on water t-shirt. If we focus on the niche and not the product, we get much more benefit out of the shop algorithm side of this. And we have more chance of showing up for the most relevant keywords. It's a lot harder to compete for the word t-shirt than it is for Christian boho Jesus walking on water t-shirt. We want to be relevant where we have the ability to compete. And if we're using a niche-based model, it gives us more opportunities, not fewer opportunities, to be relevant where it matters.
Yeah. Here's the other thing I want to kind of make sure that we're clear on. If you are like right now, we're talking about how this affects Etsy. But what I want you to start doing is I want you to start thinking like Etsy is just a sales channel. Okay. And what I mean by that is like, imagine you take all of your products, you put them on your own website, and you now find an audience of people that are into that thing. And then you direct those people over to your shop. Like, I want you to start thinking along those lines, because it's like anything, right? The world is a bigger place than just where you are living right now, right? It's the same idea. So we have to understand, like, there's so much more out there if we do it correctly versus being like, I'm just going to sell t-shirts. I'm just going to sell candles. I'm just going to sell mugs. And then I'm going to just put random stuff on it. It's, again, I've said this before, it's going down Boardwalk and you're like going to the t-shirt shop and it just has everything in it. Okay. It's not as sustainable. And it's like, you're not going to be sending an email to those people saying like, hey, we just added a new shirt and people are going to go rush there. But if you have someone that's interested in the topic, and in this case, Christianity, and you send something out and it says, hey, we just created this new art piece on whatever verse, or whatever, whatever script out of the Bible, like whatever, you're going to get people that are going to come over. They're genuinely interested in that and they might buy it. Like, it's an easier process. So just, I want people thinking bigger and not just in the box of Etsy. Okay. Even though that's what we're using Etsy for right now is like a launch pad. But that's, I just want you to start thinking along those lines. And when you, I got a question before we move on. When you started this journey in Etsy, did you have that thought? Or was it only like, I'm going to go on Etsy, I'm going to build a business on Etsy, and I'm going to sell stuff on Etsy, and I'm going to make my money on Etsy? Did you ever consider outside of Etsy? I'm just curious. And maybe no, and that's fine. I'm glad we've met, because, you know, now we can kind of introduce that to you, which I think is a bigger vision.
Hi, welcome. My name is Scott. the other thing that you just said, and it never occurred to me until just now, you and I use that Boardwalk shop example all the time. And I'm curious if anybody outside of like US East Coast people get that reference. Is that a thing? People in the comments, let me know. Are like Boardwalk shops or Boardwalks even a thing on the West Coast of the US? Because it's like every beach on the East Coast has those like kitschy t-shirt shops. Even to the point, Scott, I'm going to be in Florida in a few weeks, where they have them a few blocks back from the beach there in Fort Lauderdale, where it's like a bunch of restaurants. And then you turn the corner and it's like Bob's T-shirt Shack, right? And it's, Smith Family Vacation on like a highlighter yellow t-shirt. And they somehow sell 1,000 of those, right? You would never buy that in real life. But because you're at the beach, you just so happen to pick that up. Right. We want to avoid that feel. We want to have a reason for people to come back again and again. And if all we have are highlighter yellow t-shirts, you're going to get tired of those at some point. And we need the excuse for people to come back again and again.
Cool. Let's go into another. Well, wait a minute. Do you guys want to see another couple examples? You want us to move on? We've got other things to discuss here today. We've got something about reviews. Anybody get a one-star review that you guys want to take care of? We've got something there that we're going to share with you on that. We also have a little bit of an update on the whole Josh Silverman, CEO, we need your attention. We're going to talk a little bit about that in a little bit as well. But do you guys want to see a couple more examples, or should we move on? Let us know in the comments. Okay, yeah, a lot of a lot of questions and comments coming in. If you guys do have questions, you can drop them in there as well. And I did have something I did want to share here. One of the comments that came in, and where was it? Oh, here it is. I wanted to give a little shout out to Sherry. I just got to star seller status today, and I owe it to you guys for helping me focus on the right things as I am learning. Well, Sherry, thank you for that, and congratulations. Let's have a round of applause for Sherry for making star seller status. That's awesome. Great job. Chris, I think we had some people say they want us to show more examples. Yeah, I see that. More examples, move on. Oh, someone said move on. More examples. I think we're heavier on the more examples.
Yeah. Let's do one more.
Let's do one more.
Share one more here.
Okay.
Let me pull this one up.
All right, cool. Yeah, so this one here, I was trying to find some examples for you guys so I could, and something different. This is Wild Nomad, all right? Wild Nomad, they've got 37,534 sales. And this to me is somewhat travel, but it's the digital nomad kind of word, the wild nomad. It's like someone that isn't like in one location, right? They don't have like a home base. And to me, how I discovered this was I was looking for like people that are just into like drinking beer. I'm like, I know there's a whole IPA community out there now, homebrew, like all of that's big. And I'm like, can I find something here that would represent that? And they sell these glasses right here and some mugs there, right? But I think their top sellers are the mugs, the glasses. Chris, can you run the numbers on this real quick?
Yeah, as I'm doing that, I'd like everybody to note this thumbnail photo. This is a great way, this back and front one here. I don't know why you can't see my mouse. The one here on the left, Scott, mm-hmm. This is a great way to show off a product in a thumbnail photo. You're showing the front and the back, so they get to see the whole design. So just keep that in mind for the next time you're trying to create an image here. And if we analyze all listings,
if you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
Yeah, I think they had about 133. Yeah, 133 listings. Okay.
We're going to sort by monthly sales. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So this one isn't as big as the other one, but you can see right here, monthly revenue on the one, and that's signed, personalized magnet. Okay, a personalized magnet. Once again, personalized, which if you're on Etsy, you really want to lean into the personalization. So personalized magnet, 90 a month are selling, $1,619. Now, again, for someone that's a nomad, they're going to want to basically share where they've been, okay, or where they're going, okay? The next one is the personalized beer glasses, okay? And these are, obviously, they have a design that's more for like travel, outdoorsy, like that kind of feel. Looks like $1,558 there. And then we have some of these other ones. Chris, are you sorted monthly? Because do monthly revenue, sort it by revenue. And by the way, guys, if you guys are just tuning in, we're using Everbee to get this data. If you guys want to try it, you can for free at brandcreators.com/Everbee. And yes, if you go through our link and you upgrade, you will buy us a cup of coffee and we would appreciate that. There it is. The avocado mug, the famous avocado mug, the one that's used for an example a lot. All right. So
it's right on my desk. I can't not use it.
You have to. So we have personalized beer glass. That one there is $1,558. We have a personalized beer glass, another style there. It looks like that one is $1,447. Then another one, $1,184, and another one, $679. But these are all for the nomad, the wild nomad, the one that's traveling. They also have a personalized magnet. Now, they're really just focusing on that crowd. Okay. Clearly. Okay. Now, Chris, if you go into like their top seller, go into their top seller real quick. Yeah. Go into that. Okay. So we have personalized gift. We have national park. We have camping. We have outdoor. We have camp gift, adventure, wild nomad, beer, magnet. What are their tags? Let's go ahead and
personalized, personalized gift, wedding gift, engagement gift, magnet, outdoor gift, personalized magnet, adventure gift, guys gift, national park gift, camping mug. That's an interesting one for a magnet. But you got the tag slot. You might as well use it, I guess.
Yeah. Here's how I look at this. They want their brand to be for the traveler, right? The person that is the nomad, the wild nomad, right? But they're also capitalizing, just like we showed in another example before, they're capitalizing also on other popular niches. Okay. So like wedding, yes, this could be sold to someone that is a nomad. Even if they're not, they could still buy it, right? And someone that's getting married, right? Do you think that nomads get married? Sure. Right? Of course they do. So that's where they would use that. Now, I see opportunity here of then looking at other things that they could sell this same customer, okay? But they've done a good job of keeping it very cohesive. The other thing is, and this is actually a pretty cool thing, is if they are going to sell this to, let's say it's groomsmen, well, they're going to probably sell more than one mug. So now we've just increased that. So this is a good example of a smaller brand, but yet is going after a certain niche. So I do like this example. I think there's a ton more opportunity, but I also look at this. This is kind of how I always kind of test as if this is a good niche or a brand that could be successful. Could you take these products? Could you put them on your own website? Could you run a Facebook ad to people that are in this niche and could you sell these products? Probably yes. All right. So that's kind of how I pressure tested, if you will. Like how do I see if this thing would stand on its own outside of Etsy? To me, that's what I'm looking for as well. And this clearly is that. And look at that right down there, Chris, personalized glasses. And it's got the two of them together and with a magnet, it looks like.
It's a Christmas ornament, I believe. But this is the ornament. Yeah, this shop is a little weird to me. I get that there's crossover in these two niches.
Yeah.
But we kind of need to lean into one, unless we take a look, Scott, at the other example in the same niche that we were going to take a look at, and we figure out how to make products that people are buying for the home.
Yep.
In this same niche, right? The home drinker, the home beer person, and repurpose those for somebody who needs something maybe a little bit more rugged. Right. Because if you're a digital nomad in the style that Wild Nomad appears to be targeting, you're more like in the RVing type of a thing or the outdoor camping, right? You're a van lifer. You're not necessarily a digital nomad who lives in a foreign country or travels all around the world. You're more of like that style of a person. And so if we're looking to expand the product line of somebody like a Wild Nomad, we can't necessarily find a perfect map on shop for, okay, yes, there's 10 different shops that sell to beer drinking RVers, but we can look at the RV market and we can look at the home drinker market and then think about how can we take some of the products that are selling really well in a shop like this and appropriate those and turn those into something for our ideal market. And so if we just take a look at these really quickly, we can sort these by monthly sales or monthly revenue, however we want to do it. We can see, okay, the decanter set is destroying for them. Can we make a more rugged version of this? Is there a way that we could turn this into something that's more nomad friendly? And I know Wild Nomads is more focused around the beer drinker market, and this is general, you know, at home drinking. But if we take a look through some of these, we'll start to see, okay, here's potentially a really cool one, right? The custom whiskey cigar holder. Yes, yep. This is for whiskey, not for beer drinkers, but could we do something similar with a pint glass? Could we find somebody that's doing this in the pint glass style and create a customized one? Absolutely. This listing alone for this home wet bar is doing a little over $2,000 a month. And so if we're looking to expand our product line, even if we can't find an exact map on same exact niche shop that's doing something like we did in the Christian space, we can take a look at some of the other people who are doing well in similar niches. And all we have to do is take that extra hurdle of, okay, how can I make this work for my particular version of this niche?
Yep. Yeah. No, I think that's great. All right, cool. So hopefully you guys get the idea here of like what it looks like to have products that could be sold to the same customer, whether it's at the time of sale, okay, or if it's going to be after the sale. And the other cool thing is if someone comes in and like, oh, this is a really cool shop. I'm into this, right? I'm into the digital nomad or the wild nomad adventure kind of thing, right? I'm going to follow this shop. The minute they follow the shop, guess what? They're going to be alerted when you do something in your shop. It could be you're running a sale. It could be that you added a new product. It could be that you just added, I think I just said a sale. Maybe you ran out of a product and now you're back in stock again. Like all of those things are going to be alerts that you potentially would reach that person because they're into the thing. Okay. So again, you may have to restructure a little bit of what you're doing. I know someone in the comments said, well, I sell gift baskets for, people that are, it didn't say a reason. I think it was like just regular people and then business people or something like that, right? I think that's what it was. But you could create a gift basket for the baby niche, right? And then now all of a sudden you're in the baby niche. Now, what else could you sell that person that's going to give the gift, right? And then, or how could you bring someone else in that's not just for gifts, but you're in the baby niche now? You see, or if it's the wedding, you're going to do a bridal shower gift basket. Well, if you did that, what are you putting in the basket? And then could you separate those things out and sell them individually? Like, so you'd have to think about your own situation. But the one thing I would like anyone to do that is at all thinking about this as an e-commerce business, okay, and start thinking like that, is pressure test your thing a little bit. Take it and go, okay, wait a minute. If I was to take all my products and put them on a Shopify store or your own website, could I find an audience on Facebook that would potentially want to buy my product? If you're just selling t-shirts in random things, that means you'd have to find 100 different audiences, right? So I'd like to know, and maybe you know right now, if you do, leave it in the comments. Do you feel like you could move or even just copy what you have over onto your own website and get traffic from Facebook? I mean, the right traffic. I'm just curious. All right, Chris, anything else we want to add to that before we move on?
No, I think that's it for that. I know we have a bunch of stuff that we wanted to move on to, Scott. So I don't know if you just want to go in the order of the show notes or if something really caught your attention as we've been working our way through this.
Yeah, no, I think the comments are great. Keep them coming in. If you guys have any questions on this, let us know. Also, let us know, was this helpful? Was this helpful, this little training that we did on creating your product line? I'm just curious if it's been helpful. If it hasn't, we won't do it again. We'll just do something else. But I think it was probably helpful to some of you. All right, cool. Let's move on, Chris.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let me just get my notes together here. So you received a negative review on Etsy and, well, you're a little upset and you're thinking, oh my gosh, what am I going to do now? Because people are going to see it. New people that are coming into my shop, they're going to go, oh my gosh, this shop, I'm not buying from them. They got this nasty review or this review that said that, you know, their products weren't delivered on time or the product wasn't what I thought it was going to be. What do you do about that? So Chris, I know that we have talked about this because we've had a story or two, but Marmalade just posted something and made me realize that we should probably bring it up and share their article, but then dig in a little bit deeper. So can you pull that up, Chris?
Yeah, I have that queued up right here from our friends over at Marmalade.
Cool. Well, so they're our friends. We don't know if they're Marmalade. We haven't really formally introduced ourselves to them, but I like them. I like their product. I don't use their product. I'll be totally transparent, but we can say that we're friends because we're kind of publishing on the same content. So Marmalade, if you are watching this, how you doing? Nice to meet you.
Would you say, Scott, Marmalade, just to be real French about it, or Marmalade?
I don't know, actually. I really don't know. Do you know for sure?
I've always heard Marmalade, but the And I've never actually paid attention to it until just now, right? Where I'm looking at it, I was like, I would say marmalade, right? But that's just me.
Yeah.
And I don't tend to get very, French about things, but I am channeling early 2000s pop music here, thinking about Little Lady Marmalade. What we're talking about is getting a bad review on Etsy, now what? And this is something, whether it's going to happen at the very first one that you get is always going to be a trigger for people. Once you've gotten 100 of these, you kind of care a whole lot less because you're like, nothing I can do about it. But the first one, especially if it's like your first or second review, can feel like it's the end. And I think the photo they chose for the cover here is absolutely perfect.
It's on point. Right? Yeah.
And everybody in the comments is letting us know that it's Marmalade, right? L-E-E-E-E-D. So we'll go with that, like capturing marketing leads. And they're saying, no news is good news, as the old adage goes. But what happens when you get bad news on Etsy? What is the process that you should be going through? And Scott, I know you had an experience with this recently, and I'm curious how your wife handled it as we start to work our way.
Well, yeah. And before I share that, there is something I'll share with you guys and something that you all should do if you get a negative review. It's like a must, but I'll kind of walk you through what happened. But what I would like you to do, Chris, is scroll down a little bit in the article and find the part where Etsy, what it says about certain things that won't stay as a negative review. So if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see something in their terms of service, I believe. Keep going. It's a screenshot. I remember seeing it right there. Okay. So basically, Etsy has stringent rules. Okay. I can't read that now, but go ahead. So these are their stringent rules. Okay. So one, contain private information. So if there's private information that's in the review, they won't use it. Okay. Two, contain graphic, mature, or obscene language or imagery. Okay. That type of stuff. Contain hateful type of message, contain prohibited medical drug claims, contain advertising or spam, be about things outside the seller's control. And this is the one I really wanted to highlight here. Number six, if for some reason you have an issue with the shipping, the carrier, okay, it's not technically your fault. So because of that, technically, Etsy should not keep that as a negative review. Now, whether that happens or not, we can't say, okay? For the most part, I do believe that they remove them, okay? You may have to contact seller support, and on that, you probably will get someone to look at it, and you probably will get that removed. So that's one thing. If it's related to shipping, you want to make sure that is addressed, okay? Obviously number seven, contains threats or harassment or things like that. So basically it's like, if someone is going to be rude and obnoxious, they're not going to allow that to be in there. Okay. Now let me share the story. So recently my wife had someone that, complained that the product didn't arrive. Okay. And now they did not leave a review yet. Okay. Yet what they did was, is they said, listen, it hadn't been received. I haven't received it. It should have been here. And it hasn't been. So I was hoping you can send me another one. And I was hoping I could change the color. So that right away was kind of a red flag, because we're like, wait a minute here. This person seems like they wanted a different color, but they don't want to pay for it. And they're just going to pretend like they didn't receive it. That's kind of what my hunch was. I don't like to think people are like that, but I'm like, why would you want to change the order after that? So the great thing about using a postal service of some kind, you can track. And usually nowadays they're taking pictures of the package on the porch or wherever, right? Well, sure enough, package was delivered. Okay. So there's proof that it was delivered. So my wife goes back to her and says, well, I reached out to the shipping company. I looked into it and it does say that it's been received. Now I'm not accusing you. Maybe it got misplaced to another location and they assumed it was yours, whatever. But I'd be more than happy to send you out another sweatshirt. Okay. Didn't say we're going to change the color or anything, because that wasn't the original deal. That person left a negative review and said basically that they ordered, it didn't come in time, and that they wanted a refund. So my wife This is what I would recommend doing. And this is big. Okay. Someone leaves that review. Now this has to do with shipping. That should be removed automatically. But in the meantime, while it's still up there, the thing that you should do is you should address it. And you should now comment on that review as the seller and basically saying like, you know, hey, Sally, you know, I did reach out to you. We did notice that it was a shipping error. We immediately shipped you out a new item. I'm sorry that you still feel as though this was a bad experience for you and that you gave us a one star. You know, so basically addressing it. Now, if someone reads that review, is that going to negatively affect our shop? No, most likely not, because we've all seen those. We're like, okay, this person's being a little, you know, just a little extreme. Okay. But at least it shows your customers or your potential customers that you're addressing it and that you're on top of it. Now, most likely that is going to get removed, but this lady, it kind of seems like trying to pull a fast one. All right. And well, we weren't going to let her get away with it. All right. Because we're not just going to send you out another item for free of a different color because you changed your mind on the color. But that's for another story. All right. But that's how we would address it. Chris, what else are they saying in that article that we should probably address?
Yeah. And I think the process here is what's really important. The first thing is you got to take the emotion out of it. Right. It's really easy to get a negative review and go, ah, or to even go through the process, Scott, that your wife went through, which is like, well, I looked at the stupid shipping thing and it says that it was delivered. Right. And then you immediately go comment on the review. That's actually kind of your last thing that you want to do. The very first thing you want to do is take a step back, take a breath, right? Mm-hmm. See if it violates policies. That would be step number one. And then number two would be to reach out privately, go into the messaging function within Etsy and try to reach out privately before you respond publicly. Because once you respond publicly, it limits the ability for Etsy to remove that review. Why that is, even if it violates their policy, no one actually knows, right? But you know, it's just a weird quirk of the Etsy ecosystem. So that public response really should be the last resort. And Scott, that is really where they get to in the article, mm-hmm. which is like, look, do everything you can to respond privately and then respond publicly. If you've tried to solve this, which is exactly what your wife just did, and it just doesn't work, then follow up and say, look, you know, we shipped it. It was delivered, or it was marked as delivered by USPS or whoever. We sent you another one. I'm sorry that you had a bad experience.
Yeah.
Obviously with a little bit less tone than I have right now, but you're typing, so it won't come through anyway, right? If you want to be a little snarky and said, hey, you know, we tried, we messaged you a bunch of times. You didn't respond to us. However you want to handle it, you can handle it publicly, but I would say that would be the last resort. So see if it violates policy, respond privately, and then when you have to escalate it, respond publicly. And here's the deal. There's a phrase or a concept in the legal world, Scott, and you may have heard this. When you have a witness who maybe isn't the greatest person on the planet, but they're a key witness for your case, you, as the lawyer, have to bring up the parts of their personality or the parts of their story that are not as appealing before the other side does. It's called drawing the sting, right? So you're taking the wind out of the sails of the prosecutor who's going to come back and go, oh, well, he's just a drunk or whatever, right? You say, sir, do you have a problem with alcohol? Right. It's called drawing the sting. And what we do when we publicly respond to a review after we've gone through that, we draw the sting out of that review by saying, we actually care. The only power that a negative review has is if you as a seller don't care enough to address or show other customers that you have addressed the issue. And that public response being the last way that you do that, listing out all of the other ways that you've tried to help that person, draws the sting out of that negative review for anybody who, like I do occasionally, Scott, and I'm sure you do this, right? You just sort by one-star reviews just to see the funny things that people are saying. Even if you're one of those people and you're doing it seriously, when you see that the seller cares enough to respond, it makes most people go, okay, this person is just a little out there, right? Maybe they didn't have as bad of an experience as they think they did. Maybe they're just a Karen, right? Or maybe they just like to complain. And I know that if I have a problem, they're at least going to try to take care of it. Maybe they won't be able to successfully resolve it, but you're able to draw the sting. You're able to draw all of the power out of that negative review with that public response. But again, we want to leave that as the absolute last resort, because once we do that, it limits the ability for Etsy to take action on that. So we want to keep those things in mind. Scott, the eight things that we were talking about in sharing that earlier, which was, does it contain any private information? Does it contain any obscene, racist, or harassing language? Does it violate the anti-discrimination policy? Which I find it kind of amusing that they have those two things split up, because I would think anything that's obscene, racist, or harassing would also violate Etsy's anti-discrimination policy. You know, is it advertising or spam? Are they shilling for somebody else, right? Or does it contain something that's outside of the seller's control, like shipping? And what you will find in most cases is that it falls kind of into that shipping category, because people don't like the wait time, or they had a missed delivery. And I know this was a big deal last year in the UK, where the UK Postal Service had a lot of long delivery times because they were on, I believe they were on strike, right? They had a lot of issues getting stuff delivered on time. And if you ship it on time, you can't be responsible for what happens in transit. And Etsy acknowledges that. So if we go through that process, we take a minute, we take a step back, we then try to address it privately. If we can't address it privately and it doesn't violate Etsy's policy, we can't get them to remove it, then we address it publicly. We draw the sting out and show future customers that we're willing to address any issues as reasonably as we possibly can.
Yeah. And the only thing I do want to make sure that we're clear on, and someone had brought it up in the comments, is that that should be a last resort. To like, my wife replied on that comment after we saw it was not removed. Okay. So just because it's about shipping, it doesn't mean that it will be removed. It should be, but doesn't mean that it will be. So that should be a last resort. So that way there, like Chris just said, you can kind of remove some of that sting, that if you didn't add context to it, it would make it more effective as a negative review versus it being like, oh, there was an issue. The seller tried to make it right, but the customer is still not happy, right? So at least it shows a little bit of the dialogue, but that will not be removed once you do comment on that review. So make sure that it's your last resort to do that. So this way here, you can make sure that it's going to be there forever. You're going to know it, but you can make sure that it's the right decision at that time. So just keep that in mind, but always try to make that customer happy any way that you can within reason. It doesn't mean that you should just give free product to give free product. All right. But you definitely want to make sure that you give them less hurdles to jump through.
Scott, are you saying the customer is not always right?
I am.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And I think that's the thing, right? It's like, we're going to do what we can to make this right. But if you are clearly an unreasonable or unhinged human being, right? You send me a picture of your shirt and clearly your dog got a hold of it, right? Like, I might not be able to help you out there, but we're going to do what we can to help you out within reason. And if you're able to communicate that, 99% of people understand that you care enough to at least try to work things out, and they will side with the seller in most cases once we start to draw that sting out.
Yep. All right, cool. So there you go. That's what I would do if you get a negative review. All right, so let's go ahead and move on, Chris. We've got another, this is a big one. I really want to address this, and I'm glad that we still have well over 140 people still on with us live, because I'm going to need your help once again. We're going to need some help on this that's going to help the Etsy community. And that is, this whole thing about accounts getting suspended and all of that. So let's go ahead and kind of address this here. Etsy sellers are furious, and they have every right to be, because, well, Etsy support, not good. And what I mean by that is we can't actually get in touch with a human about our shop or about our account if it got suspended or if a listing got suspended. We don't get any clarity. We've done videos in the past, and we're trying to get Etsy's CEO, Josh Silverman's attention. And so far, we have failed at that. We created a video recently where it was all about Etsy sellers speaking out. That video is over 13,000 views, 500 plus comments. Some of the comments have hundreds of likes on them. And we've got over 1,100 likes on that. But the YouTube algorithm just isn't giving it enough push. And we want to bring attention to that again. But more than that, we want to speak to what has happened since we published that video. And I received an email after that aired, and I had someone say, Scott, I've got a secret connection inside of Etsy that can get direct access to Josh Silverman, the CEO. And I'm like, okay, tell me more. And well, they gave me that inside connection. So what did I do? I gave it to Chris and I said, Chris, I need you to send this off and let's see if we get a reply. And Chris, I'm curious, where are we at right now with that reply?
Crickets, just basically ignored. You know, not a huge surprise, because reaching out in any of these contexts can be a bit of a long shot. I know when we had the mockpocalypse back last year, it took us, I think it was 12 different emails to actually get a response from somebody that knew what they were talking about. And we're still following up on these things. But it's funny, because the further up in the chain you go, and we know these things are being opened, because I'm tech savvy enough to include open trackers in the emails and the things that we're sending, right? And so they're being opened, and then they are being either forwarded on to somebody or just ignored completely. And it's kind of interesting, Scott, because we've heard more people come out. And in fact, the first time we talked about this, we got not just tens or dozens, but hundreds of stories from Etsy sellers who were dealing with this same issue. And as much lip service as Etsy has been paying to this problem, including going to some other Etsy influencers who were fans of, right? Like, anybody that can start to fix this issue, 100% on board. We will help you any way that we can. But paying a little bit of lip service and saying, hey, we're going to start to look at some of these kinds of things. The fact that it's still happening, first of all, which means they haven't taken any real action to crack down on whatever the issue is. And I understand that these things take time, but when there's hundreds of examples being shown, you can start to figure out what the common thread is and say, oh, it's this one weird line of code over here, or, oh, they all did this thing, or a good chunk of them did this thing. And it doesn't appear to really be slowing down or changing at all, which makes us feel, and everybody else that's selling on Etsy, like it's not important enough and that we're just being ignored at this point.
Yeah, well, and I'll basically say who it was. It was Starla Moore. So Starla Moore had, I think she did a video on this exact topic, which I'm a fan of Starla. So Starla, great job. And, you know, any way that we can support you and help you get the word out, we'll do it. You know what I mean? Like, that's why I'm creating this video, is because I want us to be able to get through, so we get some answers. And I believe what Starla did, and maybe Chris, you know more about actually what went down, but from what I gathered is she had someone on the inside that would be able to look at some of the suspensions that came through and then give a reason or an explanation as far as why it was done. And which I find kind of amusing, that why can someone on the inside do that for a handful of people? So I think the way it worked was like you had to submit your shop, and then Starla would take it and then send it off, and then they would pick which ones that they would do or something like that. I don't know the full thing, but it makes me question, like, why can't we just get someone on? Can't I get someone that will be willing from the Etsy team to come on here and try to explain to us? They have their own YouTube channel. They don't talk anything about this. They don't talk anything about, like, oh, our customer support is here to help you. If you want to talk to a representative, call this number. There's none of that. Or even if someone is making over X amount, maybe they get someone. Like, if you're in Facebook and you're doing Facebook ads or Meta ads, if you're doing that and you're spending a certain amount of money, you're going to get someone that you're going to be able to speak to. Okay. Yes, you got to spend a lot of money, but there's people. We did a video on Vlad from Tag Pups, or Pup Tags, I think it is. Doing $100,000 a month, gets suspended because he was $7 delinquent on an account that he forgot about, you know, as far as I know. I mean, that was the story that he told, which I believe him, but it's like Etsy, we can't even get in. You can't get the attention, even if you're doing $100,000 a month. So what we want to do here is we want to bring attention to this. If you did not watch that first video, do us a favor and go to that video. We'll link it up in the description. If you want, you can do it right here. Like this, comment on this, let us know in the comments. If you have a story that you want to share, that if this video gets the attention that we think it deserves, maybe they'll see it. Okay. If we get more votes on getting sellers support, who knows? We might actually make it happen. And the only way we're going to be able to make it happen is by you, someone in the community, helping us get this to get bigger. Okay. Or the other video that we did. So that's why we're doing this as an update. We're also doing it as like what's happened since. But I would just like to know in the comments right now, if you have a story to share, or if you have been suspended and you feel like you shouldn't have been suspended, let us know in the comments. Okay. And tell us a little bit about that. And again, maybe not even telling us, you're telling them, because hopefully this is going to get some airtime. And someone had said to me, they're like, Scott, if you get this thing big enough, it might make the news. I'm like, man, that would be amazing. Imagine if we got something that really took and went viral in the Etsy community. And then we got some airtime and we reached out to some media networks. Do you think we'd get attention then? Do you think maybe we can get Josh Silverman on this podcast or this, you know, YouTube channel? Maybe, just maybe. That'd be amazing. He'll go on CNBC and all of these, you know, major networks and talk about, oh, our gift mode did this, or, you know, we're doing this to help sellers. Oh yeah, Josh, you're helping sellers, huh? How are you giving them support and not just a template that your support team is just pushing off to them? Okay. And I put in the thumbnail of this, that this may be removed. It might be. I don't know. I'm kind of, you know, throwing ourselves out there a little bit as far as like kind of coming at them, at you, Josh, in a way that we want your attention so we can go ahead and have a conversation. That's all we're asking. And I don't mean it has to be me. If you want to go through Star Lamore, go through her. I don't care. We just need answers. That's it. We need answers. If you really, truly believe that your platform is as good as it is, which I think it's a great platform, then don't you believe that support should be vital for people that are selling and that are really making your platform succeed? Like, honestly, and I'm talking like whether you're a small, shop or a large shop, the large shops don't even have an advantage. I received an email the other day that basically said more Etsy shutdowns. And it was from a viewer that said someone famous that was selling on Etsy got suspended. A pretty good size account got suspended, didn't violate anything, no explanation, just sorry, you've been suspended. That's it. It seems like they're just shutting down without even looking at how it's affecting the Etsy bottom line. So it just doesn't make any sense. So Chris, I went on a little bit of a rant there, but this just gets me fired up. I mean, someone has to hear this. And the only way that we can do it is I feel like getting everyone together and going like, let's march in there. Come on, guys, let's go.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, you said you don't care who they go through as long as they go through someone. And I think Star Lamore is a good place to start, right? But we need to be as transparent as possible. I know she had a way to submit the shop. And I believe what she ended up doing was she sorted through anybody that didn't have an obvious IP violation and then submitted it. But as far as I'm aware, and somebody can correct me in the comments, Starler, feel free to correct me. That's kind of where that process has stopped for now. And I understand that Etsy probably doesn't, from a legal perspective, right? Colin Stretch, who is their chief legal officer, has probably said, we don't want to go out and comment on all of these individually. And as nice as that would be, that's not even what we're asking for. What we're asking for is for you to solve the problem. Ideally, you give us a real reason and not a generic, you may have violated this section of the terms of service or this section of the terms of service. And Scott, you and I had a conversation about this because I said, it seems like they're going down the same rabbit hole that Facebook went down a few years ago where they give you a really generic answer. I wonder why that is. And I did a little bit of digging into their chief legal officer. Turns out he's the former chief legal officer or worked in the legal department over at Facebook Meta. So it's no wonder that they have that same policy. But I would say this needs to go beyond Josh Silverman. Yes, technically, at the end of the day, he's the one that has control, but he also has the most things on his plate. We need to be reaching out to Nick Daniel, who is the chief product officer. Raina, who I'm not even going to try to butcher her last name, who's their chief operating and marketing officer. Rachana, who's the chief technology officer. And yes, Colin Stretch, who's the chief legal officer over there, to say, look, I understand that you don't want to put yourself in a weird, sticky situation where you say somebody violated this thing and they didn't violate it to the letter or whatever, but you need to write your policies and your terms of service in a legally coherent, but also English speaking way, or Spanish, or whatever language you want to put it in, as long as a real person can understand it. And then when somebody violates those policies, you need to tell us what was violated. Even YouTube, who is notorious for mislabeling things as violations of policies, at least has the gall to tell you which policy you may have generally violated. And a one strike thing, especially when you're mislabeling these things as policy violations, is not an acceptable solution if you actually care about sellers. I'm not saying we have to go to a 10 strike system, but saying, hey, the first time you did this, this is a strike against you. And they do that on the IP side of things, right? They suspend the listing before they suspend the account. Scott, we have a video that's gotten several hundred thousand views about you reviewing somebody's video who got suspended after repeated violations on the IP side of things. Why are we not doing this for the other policies? I'm not asking for 10. Give me a warning and then strike the account, but at least tell me what has been violated before you delete somebody's source of income. And by the way, shoot yourself in the foot by getting rid of hundreds of thousands of dollars in listing fees, pay-per-click, from the people who are successful that you're banning, even though they haven't actually violated your terms of service in any coherent or cognizable way. Sorry, yeah. I got this gets me a little excited. In case
I was going to say, this might be the first edition of Sound Off with Chris Schaefer. So guys, here's what I want you to do is if you feel Etsy needs to step up their game for support and you want them to give you that, then the first step in doing that is to get this video to be able to be seen. And the way that you can help do that is to like it, comment on it. And the comment can be just saying, yes, we need more support, or yes, I have been suspended and I was given no reason. And then maybe share some of your story. Do that. Okay. And if you are able to do those two things, it's going to help this video continue to reach more Etsy sellers. All right. And that will be the goal here. And like we said, whether you go, you know, through, you know, I'm talking about Josh Silverman, by the way, if you want to go through us, you want to go through someone else, it doesn't really matter. We just want someone in this community to be able to get answers directly from Etsy, and preferably by you. I mean, that would be amazing. So if you could do that, that'd be absolutely amazing. And then maybe we can help each other, Etsy sellers, Etsy, and become even bigger and more profitable. And the Etsy shareholders will love you for it. All right. So if you're watching this, you're an Etsy seller, there's what you can do to make sure that you can be heard. All right. So Chris, let's dig into our last topic of the day. And we did have some comments that came in, and I'm already seeing good comments coming in. I did want to throw in here, Fatty Pancake. Starless screened through the submissions and submitted the accounts that were legit. Okay, so she was scanning to make sure. Okay, I can see why you were suspended, because you were putting Disney stuff up. Get it? Okay, no IP violations, no drop shippers for the stores that were suspended that should be reinstated. I'm curious to where that's at. So maybe we'll have to do a follow-up and kind of see where that's at. But I'm all for it. So again, the way I look at it is we should be coming together and trying to get this, get this message out there. All right, cool. And there was one quick little thing here I'm going to address. Okay, cool. This is kind of back to the review thing real quick, Chris, that I'm going to address. Is there any way I can get sales to try and overcome one-star reviews to balance the reviews and boost positivity? This is something that, yes, you're going to want to do. The way that you remove a negative review, if you can't, is to bury it. Okay. And the way that you bury it is you get more reviews on top of that review. Now, the other thing is, though, is a review that is getting more attention can also then just rise to the top. So there's nothing guaranteeing that you're going to be able to bury that. Although there is a good chance that you can move it down. So it's not the first thing that you're seeing. So how do you get sales? How do you get faster sales? Well, before I would do that, okay, is I would reach out to all of your past customers through Messenger and write up some type of message that says, hey, I just wanted to check in with you, make sure that everything is still good since you've received your item. We always want to make sure that our customers are happy. And oh, if you could do us a quick favor, if you could leave us a review on how we did, that would be amazing. You might be sitting on some reviews right now without getting more sales. So that's one strategy. The second strategy would be to run a sale. So try to run a sale, and it might be a sale that is going to break even, or maybe you make, you know, maybe you're going to make $1 a unit, or you're going to make $5 a unit, like whatever it is, you're sacrificing profit to bury that. Okay. And to really move that down so you can then work on getting more positive reviews. The other thing to do is run Etsy ads. So get aggressive with the pricing and then get aggressive with your Etsy ads. If you do that, you're now going to increase the likelihood of your products selling. Now, if you have a product that isn't really in demand, it's going to be hard because now you're trying to reach people that aren't actively searching for something. And so that could be a problem. So that might take you going back to the drawing board, finding an in-demand product that fits your brand, and then from there, running through the launch process that we've talked about here on the YouTube channel, which is basically create a really great product that has a lot of demand, create a great listing, optimize it as you always would with a good title, images, description, tags, all that good stuff, and then run a product launch. And the way that we do it is we're going to discount that sometimes to just about break even. And we're going to run that for 7 days, and we're going to start running Etsy ads targeting just that listing. So we're going to turn everything else off and just point everything to that. If you don't want to turn everything else off, just increase your budget a little bit. And then that way there's enough budget to go all the way around. And then this is going to now be able to get you fresh sales, which then could also lead to reviews. But I still would do what I said in the beginning. I would reach out to these people in Messenger inside of Etsy, and I would reach out to those customers after they've received the product and let them know that you're a small business, you want to make sure that they're happy, and it would mean the world to you if they would leave their feedback on a review. And that's it. That's how I would try to get sales coming in faster or leveraging the sales that you've already received. So Chris, I just wanted to make sure that that was addressed there.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. All right. Still got a lot of you guys on here. Over 147 people still. You guys are amazing. All right. Let's move on. This one here, a little bit of a some controversy here, but we're going to go ahead and we're going to move through it anyway. Should Amazon, Etsy, eBay run from the new kid on the block, Temu? We all have heard of Temu, and if you have not, leave that in the comments, please. But Temu, they're coming. We've talked about them here. They're spending a lot of money. The last report that I heard was $2 billion in just Meta, which is basically Facebook and Instagram. And Chris, I know that there was another article just published not that long ago that's talking about this right here, about e-commerce platforms like, well, the big ones, Amazon, Etsy, eBay, and should they be running scared because Temu ain't messing around? You want to share that article, Chris?
Yeah, it should be popping up for us right now. And this one comes to us from E-commerce Bytes, Scott. And if you guys aren't familiar, great little resource just to keep caught up. But the philosophy behind this guy, and you and I have talked about the massive ad spend that Temu has had. And in fact, one of the other things that we considered talking about and sharing today was an article talking about the market awareness of Temu. And so you just brought up, like, are you living under a rock? Please let us know in the comments below, right? If you haven't heard of Temu, you're probably missing out. And E-commerce Bytes leads the article off by saying Temu is the dollar store of online platforms, which is even funnier given the other topic that we talked about covering, which is a comparison of Amazon, Temu, and Dollar Tree, and the different products that you could find on all three of those platforms. But the purpose of this article is asking, should sellers on these platforms be running scared given the advertising numbers that are going on? We're talking about $2 billion just on Meta. So far in 2024, they're expecting Temu to spend around $3 billion. And I can pretty much say it's going to be more than that if just their Meta spend last year was around $2 billion, right? Meta would be Facebook, Instagram, and maybe something inside their little Quest headset there. But realistically, Scott, given everything that we know about Temu, we know that they don't have the customer loyalty yet. People will go there, they'll try it, they'll buy once, but they're not necessarily coming back and buying again and again. And knowing, coming at this from another e-commerce site, we know that people come back to Amazon again and again and they buy, sure, maybe not from the same seller. We know that Etsy customers come back to Etsy again and again, and actually they favor coming back to the same seller over going back to the search results, which can be a mess on Etsy. And eBay, if you have an eBay customer, right, eBay people love buying on eBay. So in your mind, given the spend, given all of the news around Temu, all of the free coverage that they're getting, including right now where we're talking about them, should sellers on other platforms be afraid of Temu's existence? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, my thoughts are this, like, you can't ignore Temu. And I've said this before when we've talked about Temu, is like, right now, I think the big rub for a lot of people is, number one, they feel as it's China that's coming here to grab all of the customers, you know, that these platforms have, which we may be selling on, right? If you're selling on Amazon, if you're selling on eBay, if you're selling on Etsy. And so we can't ignore it, okay? But the question is, do we start selling on Temu platform? And right now, I do not think that that's something that we would ever entertain. But I'm not going to say never, because I've learned a long time ago that you should never say never, because you could do it eventually if things change. The one thing that wasn't mentioned in here, though, is TikTok shops. TikTok shops, like, they're coming, man. And so TikTok shops, they're really, really starting to dominate repeat customers. And we also did another video recently where we talked about how they're number two to Amazon for repeat loyalty to a brand, which is pretty remarkable. But do I think that we should be worried? No. Do I think we should pay attention? Yes. And here's what I mean. Them doing this is only going to make these other platforms aware, and they're going to have to make adjustments. They're going to have to start paying attention to their sellers and keeping those sellers, you know, happy. It's also going to have to keep their customers happy. So that means that if Amazon rolls out a new thing for customers, guess who else benefits if you're selling on Amazon? You, the seller. Same thing with Etsy. If Temu rolls out with something, well, Etsy is probably going to pay attention and go, well, we need to compete here, so we're going to have to offer this faster shipping or whatever, which we've already noticed that Temu is actually doing that. They're looking at Amazon as the role model or as the big brother. And they're like, hey, they're offering same day shipping or 2 day shipping, let's call it, because that was the big thing when they first rolled that out for Amazon, was like 2 day shipping. How are they able to do that? They add more warehouses in more states so they can make it easier to ship faster. Now they're doing it where you can get it in the same day. So Temu has already made the adjustment there to help make it an easier buying decision, where they're going to offer quicker shipping, right? How are they going to do that? They're putting warehouses in, just like Amazon. So right now, the way that I look at it is, it's disrupting the platforms and they're going to be battling it out. But as e-commerce sellers, we can also look at this as an advantage, because if new things roll out because they're trying to compete with this one or that one, we could benefit as a seller. That's how I'm feeling right now, Chris.
And it's funny, as you get further down in that article, our good buddy Steve Chu gets a two paragraph shout out.
About that a boy, Steve.
the comments that he's made on this. And I think one of the things that I pulled out of this article was actually a video that Steve made after you and I talked about it, which was for Etsy sellers specifically, right? China is being opened back up to sell on Etsy. And you used to, as a Chinese seller, be able to sell directly on Etsy, but Etsy's opening up their platform for Chinese sellers again. And so if you're looking at this from a, oh my God, I have to compete against China standpoint, I'm terrified of Temu. Well, that could be a downstream consequence of the market share that Temu has taken from people, but it's something you're going to have to compete on any platform that you have. And Scott, I liked where you were kind of going with this, which is, okay, customers are not necessarily running in droves to Temu. They might, they're going to buy it, they're going to try it, and then they run into the shipping issue, or they run into a quality issue, or they run into a fraud or a scam or something like that. If Temu can solve that problem, then they are competing essentially on level playing ground with your Amazons, your eBays, your Etsys. So at that point, do we view them as competition, or do we view them as another place to play? Right now, I don't think I would be putting my products on Temu, but if they can solve that issue and they have the market share, then there's a compelling argument to be made, at least from the seller side, that maybe we should consider it. But I don't view that as something to be running from. I view it as something that we should be keeping an eye on for sure, to from more of the opportunity perspective. I welcome competition, be it within the Etsy platform, be it on Amazon, be it on my own website, because competition makes everything better. And if they can turn themselves into a real competitor for Amazon, that actually creates more opportunity for sellers as well as more opportunity for buyers. So it's not something I would be running from. It's not something I'm running towards right now either. I'm kind of looking both directions on it, going, okay, here's all of the problems that they have. Here's the potential effect that they could have in the future. If they can solve these, then maybe I come back and reconsider that decision in a few years when they've solved those problems, if they've solved those problems. But I would say, despite the billions of dollars that they're spending, even though they are starting to make up some ground, unless they can figure out a way to solve the customer retention issue, which is something Etsy is trying to solve this year as well, they're not going to be something to be massively worried about. They're not going to erode everybody's businesses. If anything, it's going to be another opportunity for sellers to sell on if they can resolve those early stage trust issues.
Yeah. And I'd like to know in the comments, how many of you are thinking to yourself, like, Temu is going to help you as a seller because of the things that we discussed. Like, do you think it's going to help or do you think it's going to hurt? So let us know in the comments. I'd be curious to know what your thoughts are with Temu coming in so hard here on these other platforms. So that's what we wanted to share with you on Temu and how they are aggressively trying to build their customer base and their awareness by spending billions and billions of dollars. And it doesn't sound like they're going to slow down anytime soon. So Chris, do we have any questions that we need to address before we wrap up this live stream on this Wednesday afternoon?
Nothing that was a question that I caught. We did have a couple people saying, hey, you know, I think I know most people think of Temu kind of like Wish. It's kind of a gamble. You know, maybe there's a fun impulse buy. And if you go to Temu's website, it does feel a lot like Wish.com just on steroids. But that being said, they have a lot more money and time, and they're looking and following the footsteps that Amazon laid out almost to a T. And we actually, we talked about this a little bit last Friday, how they're literally following the Amazon game plan. And a lot of the same concerns outside of some of the, like the labor related things, although that did happen on Amazon as well, mirror very closely the complaints that most small e-commerce sellers had about Amazon when Amazon moved out of books and became the everything store that we know to be it today, right? Oh, the products are low quality. Nobody's ever going to go there, right? Oh, it's all junk stuff. Nobody wants to buy anything there. Why would you buy on Amazon and wait 2 days when you could just go down the street? Well, that's now become a part of our everyday lives. And it doesn't do us any favors to ignore a new platform, especially when they're spending billions of dollars a year and gain 70% mind share in American customers by being able to do that, spending incessantly on Facebook, on Instagram, on Super Bowl ads, right? The question that we need to have and that we need to answer as e-commerce sellers is, how can I leverage it if it stays around for the long term? And how can I avoid it eating my lunch in the short term? And if you are in a product niche, like we talked about earlier, where you're selling a single kind of product, you are not going to outcompete somebody like Atemu. But if you have a niche-based shop where people know exactly what they're going to get when they come to your store, they have a reason to come back to you time and time again.
Yeah.
It's not just to search for a random t-shirt. You're a lot safer and you have a much better, firmer ground to stand on than you do otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Couple quick questions here. Sue wanted to know, off topic question, how do people set their prices on digital items? I mean, if people want to put their, what they do in the comments, that'd be cool. Cause we can kind of see what's going on there. But honestly, like you have to price it to what you believe people are going to be willing to pay. And also maybe what the market is already yielding, like what it's already charging. Now that doesn't mean that you can't go higher than that if you offer more value and if you think people will pay for it. But that's a hard question to answer specifically, because you'd have to take into consideration what the market is paying for it right now. And then kind of go from there. Is there an average number of items that we should be running Etsy ads on, or run ads on everything in the shop? You want to handle this one, or do you want me to?
Yeah. So there's not a number, right? As soon as you have something in the shop, I would recommend running Etsy ads on it. There's two categories that I would say we should be running ads on. The first thing is anything that's new in the shop that you're creating, that you're trying to get that data on, you should be adding that in. Anything that is then what I call a top seller or a top potential product. So anything that sells consistently over time, that should be in Etsy ads. And then anything that has a lot of potential to sell right now. So think seasonal things. As of the time of recording this, we're in May, so maybe our 4th of July stuff, right? We're not necessarily going to be running ads on the Christmas ornaments right now, even though we are probably going to start selling a bunch of those here over the next few weeks as people start looking for those. Not a smart use of ad money right now. We'd rather be selling some of the seasonal stuff. So anything that's a new product, anything that's a top potential product, so the current seasonal items, and then anything that is a top seller or a consistent seller for your shop, I would include in there. Scott, is there anything you wanted to add to that?
No, I think you pretty much nailed it. I think, it comes down to like the products that are in demand are the ones that I would definitely want to make sure. And what I mean by that is the ones that we feel like are going to be those 3 to 5 products. And I'm saying you can advertise more than that, but you want to advertise and put as much emphasis on those, so that way there, that brings in the right traffic. That's why we always kind of start with like finding those 3 to 5 products, start there, and then that'll bring in the traffic into the shop. So yeah, something on categorization.
How to categorize your products in your shop. Should you be doing it by theme or by product?
Yeah. I'm going to pull Chris's little it depends thing, because, I wouldn't necessarily say it has to be only products. It could be themed. So if you're doing like wedding gifts, well, that's going to be its category. If you're going to create wedding sign, then that's different, right? So it's hard because at the time of doing this, I think it's 20 that we're limited to. So there's only so much you're going to have there. So I would say I wouldn't want to see if you offer like 50 different types of products, like how are you going to do that? So I would probably say if there was something that is really highly searched for, like if it's bachelorette pajamas, right? If that's it, then I would label it, label it that. If it was just, I wouldn't just do it as pajamas, I guess is what I'm saying. So, or then if you have tumblers, I wouldn't just say tumblers, it would have to be like that tumbler. If that's a really highly searched for term, then yeah, maybe you include that. So I think it's going to be, you have to kind of look and see what you're selling and then see if it makes sense to make that its own category, because that is one that's really highly in demand and people are searching for it. I think it's a shop by shop basis. You kind of got to break it down. And what would a customer want to see as they're scrolling through?
And that I think is the nice variation of it depends, right? Which is like, it depends on what those two different things are. If we're talking about types of fishing equipment, then I'm probably going to categorize it by type of fish, right? So it's like bass fishing, whatever, trout fishing, whatever, right? So if they're looking for a bass fishing thing, they can go in there, they're going to see the tumblers and the pillows. If it's kind of a 50-50 thing where it's like, okay, I have a bunch of different products and we're not really in a niche, then it becomes a little bit more complicated. But if there's not a clean break, then you have to kind of play it by ear. And my default would be to say, Scott, include like the interest and the product. So it would be, I think her example was like proverbs and something else. So it'd be like proverb pillows, proverb tumblers, proverb whatever, right? And then if you don't have proverbs, but you have quotes from Jobs or quotes from Paul or whatever, right? Like Bible quote tumblers, right? Or something like that to separate those things out. If you ran out of categories, then you have to kind of think through the easiest way to manage that for people. But if you're in a niche that's not kind of split between two different interests, it makes that a lot easier.
Okay. And I got a quick one here that popped in. How can you tell if sales are slow during certain time periods versus having a bad listing? A very simple thing is, are other people selling that type of product? What are their sales versus your sales? Like, that's the only way that you can kind of directly compare versus knowing like, okay, you sell Christmas ornaments. They're probably down right now, right? Like, that's an obvious one. But if you're selling something that you think could be selling, you have to validate that. So the way you validate it is you find something similar that is like your product and see what those sales numbers are. And that's how you can kind of see what the demand looks like. And that's the cool thing about Everbee as well, is you can kind of go back and look at the back catalog and kind of see what those have done over a period of time. So that's what I would say for that. And once again, little shameless plug for Everbee. If you want to try Everbee for free, you can go to brandcreators.com/Everbee and you can try it for free. And if you sign up for the growth plan, you will buy us a cup of coffee. And we like our coffee. So there you go. Chris, did you have another quick question there pop up?
Yeah, there was one from Mac Wildcat who said, would you consider planning and organizing a niche, a nacho?
I don't understand. What do you mean organizing a niche, planning?
Planning and organizing as the niche.
Oh, would you consider plan? Oh, I see. Not really. I mean, you could do something for wedding planners or something like that, or like someone who's a wedding planner. But once again, you got to do your research. Is there a demand of people that are looking for this thing? So I would say if I was to guess, I would say if you're looking at like just a planner in general, I would do that search. But you're probably going to find that there's certain planners for certain niches. And then that's where you would then say, okay, we're going to do a real estate planner. I don't know. I'm just making something up. Right. And then you would go that road, and then you would see are there other products that could fill out that brand?
I think from a technical perspective, it would be a niche. The question is there enough demand in the way that you classify that? Right. So Scott, I'm sure, you know, some people, and the person that comes to mind here is Amy from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. If you guys have ever seen that show, she loves planners, right? She loves tabs. She loves binders. Like, that's part of her personality in the show. Yes, there is somebody who is passionate about planners and planning and organization. But the question is, are the customers on that platform those people, or do they just want a planner for weddings? Do they want a planner for their meals? Do they want a planner for this, a planner for that? If we see that there's enough demand, then we can turn that into a niche and we can create other products that are not just planners. If there's a joke in the planning community that we can put on a pillow, a t-shirt, right? But we have to find that that demand exists within the marketplace. So technically probably is a niche, but what you're going to find in most likelihood on Etsy is that that demand is not in that niche itself. It's in all of the different ways that people use that product, use planning, use organization in their own niches.
Yeah. We did do a video recently, and it was an Etsy audit actually. And it was last week's, I believe. And it was on planners and certain guides, in a sense. So you should probably take a look at that, which also brings me to, well, I should probably remind you guys that on Thursdays, every Thursday on this channel, we publish a new Etsy shop audit, and one's going up tomorrow. It's a good one. You're going to want to watch that. But there's already right now 11. Tomorrow will be the 12th Etsy shop audit that we've recorded so far. And actually, we've recorded about 16, but only 12 of them have aired yet. Because what we do, if you don't know this, is me and Chris, we record a batch session of 3 to 4 Etsy shop audits, and we pre-record them. Okay, it's our little private thing that we do. We also have our Backstage Pass club members that they sit in on these Etsy shop audits and get to do what you're doing right now and ask questions along the way. And they get access to those before they actually air. They're raw and unedited as well. If you would like to be part of the Backstage Pass club, you can be. It's under 10 bucks, and you will get direct access to all of the behind the scenes stuff that we do there. And you get to ask questions directly to Chris and I, and we'll make sure that we answer all of them. So if you'd like to be part of that, you can just visit, well, you can do it right here on YouTube. There's a join button. You can just click that, or you can go to brandcreators.com/club. So if you go to brandcreators.com/club, we should have a little banner there. Right there. And you can check that out. All right. And you can be, one of the cool kids, as we like to say in the Backstage Pass club, at least some say. Anyway, that's what I got for you today, guys. I want to thank you so much for hanging out with us. Well over 150 people on pretty much the entire time. And I want to thank each and every one of you. And if you're watching this on the replay, we'd love to have you attend live sometime. You can ask questions, hang out with us. But if not, we get it. You can just sit here and watch the replay. A lot of cool stuff happening though. We're going to continue to do more news stuff so we can keep you up to date on e-commerce news. We're also going to be doing weekly videos just like we normally are. Monday, Tuesday, and Thursdays are going to be the Etsy shop audits. So make sure that you subscribe to the YouTube channel, and this will help us reach more people and help more people. And hopefully, who knows, maybe even get the attention of someone like Josh Silverman, the CEO of Etsy. That'd be amazing. So guys, all the resources, everything we talked about, we'll make sure that we drop it in the description. We'll also have timestamps and everything there. So if you want to skip around a little bit, you can do that too. All right, guys. So that's it. That's going to wrap it up. As always, take care, take action. Have an awesome, amazing day. We'll see you guys.